Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Ohio's proposed right to repair law has been stalled in the state legislature for more than a year now, even though proponents claim it would save consumers money and keep otherwise serviceable devices out of landfills. But the right to repair is not the same as the ability to repair. We'll take a closer look. Also this morning, how dividend investing can help your savings work harder for you at a time when we all could use an extra boost. And in our community and business spotlight, all about the fuel and petroleum services offered by Legacy Farmers Cooperative, and not just for farmers. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, July 7th, 2026. You know who I feel worst for? I feel really bad. I mean, obviously, I'm disappointed by last night's result in the loss to Belgium in the World Cup, but who I feel worst for in all of this are the players. I mean, the players, the coaches who poured their heart and soul into representing the country honorably at this World Cup on home soil. I don't think anyone really thought that they were going to win this tournament, but they deserve to exit. Whenever the exit came, they deserved to exit with dignity, and that has largely been denied to them by forces outside their control. What I mean by that is, however you feel about everything that transpired over the past few days leading up to this game, however you feel about everything that has happened, this is a team now that will forever be remembered for the controversy that they had nothing to do with. The players, the coaches, this was not on them. They had nothing to do with this. And yet that's what they will be remembered for. And that's sad. That's unfair. Because they really had a terrific run. And from this fan to Team USA, thank you for a really fun couple of weeks. This was a great ride, and we look forward to doing it again in 4 years. So that's all I had to say about that. On a more serious note this morning, if you happen to see flags flying at a half staff today, no, it is in honor of fallen police officer Scott Reese, the Rittman, Ohio Police Department. Sergeant Reese shot and killed in the line of duty on Sunday night, responding to a break-in and shots fired in the city of Rittman. There were four other officers that were injured and three were killed, including a woman, her 13-year-old daughter, and the gunman. And of course, Sergeant Reese shot and killed in that incident as well. Governor DeWine ordered flags at half staff, specifically in Columbus and in Wayne County, where Rittman is located, in honor of Sergeant Reese. And if you happen to see flags at half staff elsewhere, know that that is the reason. And our thoughts and prayers are with Sergeant Reese's family and loved ones. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day to get your Tuesday started. So America is 250 years old now, but are Americans having a happy birthday? A sweeping new report from the State of the Nation Project ranked all 50 states and Washington, D.C. across 31 well-being and quality of life metrics. And Minnesota ranked first as the happiest state, according to this data. New Hampshire, number two, Iowa, Vermont, and Massachusetts rounding out the top five. Louisiana was at the bottom of the list, dead last. New Mexico, West Virginia, Nevada, and Mississippi close behind at the bottom of the list. Ohio ranks 37th, 37th out of 50 plus DC. What is most alarming, overall, in the rankings, in look at the data, not a single state is improving in terms of their happiness on these well-being and quality of life measures. Not a single state is improving, and 96% of tracked well-being cases are worsening. And by the way, it doesn't have anything to do with wealth. Richer states showed no meaningful advantage when it comes to personal happiness. So money can't buy you happiness, as it turns out. The author's concluding that America is experiencing a deepening inner crisis that economic growth alone cannot resolve. So I don't mean to be depressing this morning, but I found it interesting. Speaking of state rankings, this is the time of year for travel and, of course, dining out, right? With that in mind, a Canadian-based entertainment website analyzed 50 years of CDC data along with social media complaints and traveler surveys across all 50 states, and they found that Oregon is the top food poisoning risk state in the U.S. Oregon. They report roughly one foodborne illness for every 63 residents. Wow. Delaware ranked second, with Pennsylvania, Colorado, and Nevada rounding out the top five. Alaska was the safest state, with just one illness per 3,234 people. Indiana was second safest, followed by Utah, Missouri, and Ohio. Finally, a list where we're at the top, and it's a good thing to be at the top of this list. Ohio with one case per 1,628 people of foodborne illness. So good news there. You can feel okay about dining out. You're fine. Just something to remember if you are vacationing in Oregon, especially, or Delaware, Pennsylvania, Colorado, or Nevada. You might think twice about eating out, I guess. By the way, speaking of dining and making people sick, a dietitian at the Cleveland Clinic is raising awareness of the dangers of grilling meat in the summertime. Danger! Grilling meat is dangerous, apparently. Dr. Julia Zampano says grilling hot dogs, sausages, and the like increases exposure to carcinogens, cancer-causing chemicals. Instead of doing the dogs and the brats and all of that, she suggests grilling leaner meats like chicken breast, turkey breast, and lean ground beef. She also recommends pre-cooking some of the meat because she says the longer the meat is exposed to the flames, the higher chance of creating or releasing the carcinogens and the effects thereof. When grilling, certain chemicals can be released that have a potential to be cancer-causing. And so I guess we're not allowed to grill anymore, the doctor say. Can't do that anymore. Everything is going to kill us. Now grilling is even going to kill us. But is it really? Is it really? Here is more good news to balance out that bad news. New mortality data from the federal government suggests that the life expectancy of Americans probably hit another record high in 2025, as death rates have continued to fall since the height of the COVID pandemic. There were about 689 deaths for every 100,000 people in the U.S. last year, according to a new CDC report. That is the lowest rate recorded in more than a century of tracking. Lowest in more than a century. Pretty impressive, right? Now, as we mentioned, that suggests that life expectancy probably hit another record. And the reason why we use that terminology is because the life expectancy calculation is not included in this report that we're referencing because the data is all provisional. The final numbers will come later. But experts say that a record low death rate most likely suggests a record high life expectancy, which makes sense. If you're not dying, then you're living longer. But we won't know that for sure for a while yet until we get the final data. But interesting stuff, nonetheless. And if you want to shorten that life expectancy, go running with the bulls. That begins today. Maybe that's why the USA crashed out of the World Cup. They want to go and run with the bulls because that begins today. We don't want to be distracted by the World Cup. We want to go run with the bulls. Thousands are packing the streets of Pamplona, Spain, for the annual ritual, a centuries-old tradition that is part of the Festival of San Fermín, beginning today through July 14th. The bulls, weighing more than 1,300 pounds each, will be let loose through the streets while people run for safety. And they do this for fun. Not everyone makes it out alive. They've had a number of fatalities over the years. So hopefully everybody remains safe and has a lot of fun running with the bulls. Begins today through July 14th. So there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly sunny today with a high in the 80s, partly cloudy tonight, low in the 60s. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office says it's proud to announce the revitalization of its canine program and introduce the newest members of their team, Canine Rhea and Handler Deputy Gary Hook. The Sheriff's Office says Canine Rhea is a 21-month-old dual-purpose German Shepherd and Belgian Malinois mix, and she and Deputy Hook went through an intensive 6 weeks of training and recently graduated from the XL Canine Training School. The Sheriff's Office extends its sincere appreciation to the Fraternal Order of Eagles for its generous donation toward the purchase of Canine Rhea, saying their support and commitment to public safety helped make the revitalization of the important program possible. See a picture of Canine Rhea and Deputy Hook in this story on our website. New numbers show a worrying trend on Ohio's roadways.
State Highway Patrol troopers say fatal crashes are up about 6% compared to last year, with more than 500 people killed so far this year. Officials say distracted and impaired driving continue to be the biggest factors.
ONN's Danita Harris reporting. Get more on our website. Findlay High School has been designated a Purple Star School. The prestigious award recognizes schools that demonstrate a major commitment to students and families connected to the nation's military. The high school says, as our community and country reflect on 250 years of independence, we are powerfully reminded that our freedoms are sustained by generations of bravery. Get more on the Purple Star designation and this story on our website. Blanchard Valley Health System says one of the best ways to improve a student's academic performance is more recess, saying research shows that regular exercise during recess can boost test scores while also improving attention, memory, cognitive function, and emotional regulation. Learn more about the benefits of recess in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, be it our phones, our computers, our TVs, or really anything else, every gadget that we own has a natural lifespan, right? But too many of our devices are getting disposed of prematurely because, you know, the screen gets busted or the battery dies. And that is one reason why many states have passed so-called right to repair legislation to make it easier and less costly to extend the usable life of those devices that otherwise have, you know, minor problems. Ohio has been working on it. Last year, the Digital Fair Repair Act was introduced in the state legislature, but it has been stalled for many months in committee, despite efforts to try and move it forward. But you look a little closer, the right to repair and the ability to repair are not the same thing. So just how repairable are some of these devices in the first place? In a new report, CNET's Katie Collins takes a deeper dive. And first of all, Katie, for those who may be, you know, don't follow the latest tech news all that closely, why is right to repair becoming such a talking point and triggering so much legislative action in every state, including Ohio?
I think there's a dual-fold aspect to this. I think, firstly, we are wanting to keep our devices for longer, for a start. You know, we're all struggling with the cost of living crisis. Technology is expensive. And when we buy something, we obviously want to get the maximum lifespan out of it. Mm-hmm. So there's more of an emphasis on, you know, how can we keep our stuff for longer? Can we repair it either professionally or ourselves and hopefully save ourselves some money? And I think the second aspect is, you know, this kind of idea of there's finite sources of the minerals needed to make our technology in the world. We're starting to see e-waste really, really piling up and causing environmental damage to communities. So we've got these two things that are really driving this legislation, which is, you know, but it is largely being shaped around consumer rights and, you know, our right to say, well, we own this. And if we want to repair it, we should be able to.
Now, manufacturers, of course, have resisted letting just anyone fix their devices or letting consumers fix them themselves, with the idea of, or this is the excuse they've used, that it could, you know, make the problem worse. This is delicate, you know, technology that's packed into these devices. And that is certainly not new. I mean, prying apart a Rolex probably is not a good idea either. So isn't that a valid concern?
Historically, yes, that has been kind of a valid concern, especially as we've seen, you know, we went through a phase for our phones, for example. For a long time, we could take the back off and replace the battery ourselves. And then we started to see things being glued shut. And, you know, that was to ensure waterproofing and dustproofing and to, you know, to make sure that they were resilient. But you've got to balance that with, you know, the ability to be able to repair stuff, because, you know, we're all seeing issues with our phone batteries, you know, feeling like the phone batteries are dying long before the phone itself or our phone screens. So you know, we are seeing more and more pressure to kind of for companies to acknowledge these issues and try and make their gadgets repairable for us.
And in the piece, you make a good point that that has certainly become more mainstream with phones. But you also have now these really micro devices that are becoming very, very popular. And even the manufacturers themselves have pushed back on certain tech items, saying that they are not designed to be repairable. Earbuds or the, you know, Aura rings with all of the biosensors in them. So
yeah, I think that, you know, there has been for a long time with these smaller items, just like this assumption that it's just not possible to repair them. Yeah. And therefore, we're not going to bother trying to make them repairable. But actually, what we've seen over the past year or so is that it is actually possible to repair these things if you have the right design. And then there are certain companies coming in and proving that it's possible. And I think that that is challenging the rest of the industry to, you know, really up their game and to, you know, it's showing that, you know, when one company does it, why can't the rest follow and allow us to repair our stuff?
So to be clear, it does not hamper the continual innovation of design. And, you know, because one of the things with technology is the latest and greatest is to make things smaller and more compact. And this doesn't hamper that ability to continue to do that.
Well, I would say that certain companies that are working on emerging product categories like smart rings and, you know, smart glasses that are still, you know, not at all mainstream, they're kind of at the cutting edge. They're just kind of starting to gain traction and, you know, really establish themselves as form factors and, you know, kind of answer that question as to why we would want them. They're still working on that kind of stuff. So in that sense, I think that the companies that make them would argue that, yes, repairability would, you know, it's just not something that they can do right now because they're still figuring it out. But I think more established products like smartwatches and earbuds and other headphones, which have been around for much longer, you know, smartwatches are, say, a decade old now.
Sure.
And, you know, we are starting to see movement in those product categories. So the ones that are more established, it is looking possible, and they are being able to do it without, you know, without having to sacrifice that waterproofing and that dustproofing that we talked about.
And case in point for the piece, that's exactly what you did, because now that we've got more states who are requiring these companies to allow third parties or even consumers to tinker with their devices on their own, we're getting instructions and guides and the parts being made available to do so. So as you look into this for the piece, you took apart a smartwatch. How repairable are some of these gadgets, really.
Yeah, so I wanted to have a go at taking apart the Google Pixel Watch 4 because Google, you know, re-engineered this watch to make it possible for anyone to repair it, supposedly. And I don't have any repair experience, so I thought, actually, I'm the perfect person to test this because if I can do it, then anyone could do it. And so I ordered a screen replacement kit from iFixit, and they have guides on their website as to how they repair lots of different pieces of technology. So I followed their guide and it said that it was going to take me half an hour to an hour, and it actually took me closer to 90 minutes. But I did successfully replace the screen and it turned on and it still works. So I went into it feeling intimidated. I did struggle a little bit, but actually coming out the other side of it, I feel way more confident now to actually go and try and repair things in the future. I think that a lot of us lack this, you know, because repairing stuff isn't perhaps something that we're used to in this day and age. We do live in a fairly disposable culture, but
learning that
skill actually made me feel a lot more confident about my own abilities. So, you know, I do think it's possible. It's about kind of maybe getting over that kind of psychological hurdle and embracing, you know, learning a new skill along the way.
So it is possible. Let's say that I do take my device to a third-party repaired shop or I do it on my own. What does that do to any warranty protection on the devices? Is that why legislation is needed to protect consumers in that way?
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing is, you know, I would recommend the warranty should always be your first kind of port of call with these things. But what we're seeing, especially with like a lot of the smart glasses that are coming on the market, you know, Reddit is full of people who are just outside of their warranty, which will be, you know, 6 months to a year on a pair of smart glasses, and then they break. And, you know, that they expected when they dropped $400 or whatever it was on this piece of technology that it was going to last them longer than a year. So I think that this is really designed to go beyond the protections offered by warranties, because, you know, they only stretch so far usually.
I suppose at the end of the day, the same thing has been true as it's been with trying to repair anything that we own. If we try and we fail, then it's worthless anyway. If we don't try, it's going to be worthless anyway. So, you know, it's six one way, half a dozen the other.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I think that the, you know, that's where this is designed to really come in, because we all have that drawer of stuff at home that's like broken down and it's not quite right. And we're like, we don't know what to do with it. We're like, should we throw it away? Should we try and recycle it? And we kind of make it a problem for later. And if we're not doing anything with it anyway, why not have a go at fixing it?
And again, if it keeps some of that stuff out of the landfill, then so much the better. Interesting stuff there. CNET's Katie Collins with us this morning. Katie, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, with many Americans looking for ways to make their money work harder, dividend investing is gaining attention as a potential source of additional income. And, of course, new tools these days making it easier to invest and easier to understand and manage those investments. Joining us this morning is Jared Hubbard from the investment platform Plink. And Jared, first of all, let's start with that terminology that we mentioned. What is dividend investing and why is this growing in popularity?
Yeah, so dividend investing is investing into stocks, ETFs, or mutual funds that pay dividends. And what I mean by paying dividends is cash payments that these companies are taking out of their profits and giving back to the shareholders of those securities. And that typically happens on a quarterly basis, you know, every 3 months, but it can vary on investment to investment. As far as it growing in popularity, I think people are starting to realize that this is a way for my money that I'm investing to work harder for me. You know, it's a way to create a passive income stream on top of your long-term investment goals.
So in other words, you're making money on the investments, not just when you sell them, but during the course of while you are holding your investments.
Correct. And typically users will have the options to either reinvest those dividends back in to the company or fund, or take that income to itself. And this is something actually that we have launched at Plink. We actually have an offer that is a 25% dividend boost. So if you do own any securities that pay you dividends, we, Plink, will actually have a 25% match on that up to $250 annually per user.
Now, since you brought up the platform, let me ask you that. Talk about how technology, as we mentioned, is making investing easier for everyday Americans.
Yeah, so technology has absolutely embraced the accessibility piece when it comes to investing. So barriers are being broken down, whether that's the reducing of costs across the board, or it's the simplifying of decision making, right? More tools to help you figure out what you should be investing into. But all with the idea to create an experience, let's say, that's more welcoming to first time or more novice investors. And with applications and investment platforms like Plink, you can start with as little as a dollar, you know, utilizing tailored educational content on different topics to you, as well as a very easy to use and unique and less intimidating user interface for users.
What about the argument that the technology is maybe making it too easy? Critics say that too many people are getting in over their heads and into areas of investing that they don't fully understand. Like, I can play a flight simulator game on my computer doesn't mean that I'm ready to fly a 747.
very good point. So one of the things Plink prides itself on is creating an experience in our goal, which is building confidence and ensuring and trying to make sure users know what and why they're doing something or why they're taking an action. And there's a number of tools within the Plink application that, while we want you to read and educate yourself, but you might want to practice before you actually invest. So there's tools within the Plink mobile application like simulated trading, for example, that users can take a fake $10,000 and invest it using real-time data, but practice investment techniques and strategies to make themselves feel confident before they actually take that leap.
What are some of the common mistakes that investors should avoid?
Some common mistakes that start with, maybe the first one that comes to mind is the failure to invest, simply on the fact that you feel like you might not have enough money to do so. So with applications like Plink, you know, you can start as little as $1. So what I like to say is inaction is an action. So if you are not making that first step forward, right, and you feel like I just can't act yet, you're choosing to do that. But with applications like Plink, you can start as little as $1 and get invested. Another common mistake that we see is the failure to diversify. So diversification is the focus on spreading out your risk, right, allocating that risk across multiple different investment types and sectors. Too often we see, you know, a very high, what we would call a high concentration risk. You're putting too much into one security and exposing yourself to that performance and that performance alone.
Mm-hmm. I would guess, too, that there is kind of the flip side of not investing at all is the fear of people being so focused on the need to generate additional income, either because their budget is so tight or because they're trying to make up for lost time in their retirement plan or what have you, that they will go all in too quickly. They will ignore maybe certain warning signs or take risks that they really shouldn't.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point to bring up. So whenever you're thinking about investing, whether it's creating a portfolio or any security, then one of the most important things is not necessarily jumping on the bandwagon. It's the idea of, what is my own individual risk tolerance? What is the time horizon, right? How long am I planning on investing this until I actually need the funds? It should never just be jumping in on what you think is a hot item.
Again, Jared Hubbard is with us from Plink, the investment platform. We are talking about dividend investing, but really in the broader sense, investing and doing so with confidence. And where can folks go for more information?
Yeah, so first, we're available within the iOS App Store for download. We're also available in the Android Google Play Store for download. And again, that's Plink. And then you can also go to plinkinvest.com. and learn all about Plink, along with that 25% dividend match offer.
Jared Hubbard, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In today's broken news, a man in Felton, Delaware has died. And again, it's not usually funny when people die. I realize that. And we have a general rule of thumb that those stories are not included in the broken news, but sometimes the circumstances are so bizarre, as is this case in Delaware. A 65-year-old victim is dead after a camel fell on him. Great camel fell. This probably doesn't happen very often, especially in Delaware. State police responded to a call last Tuesday where they found the victim. Investigators say the man was tending to the animal when it somehow fell on top of him. How that happens in Delaware. It's weird. Let's see here. Meanwhile, a woman in Canton, sometimes you don't have to go very far, find the broken news. In Canton, Ohio, a woman recovering after she was shot by celebratory gunfire while she was sleeping. Police say the incident happened on Friday night when Darius Leshman allegedly began firing a gun ahead of the 4th of July. Celebratory gunfire. But one of the bullets hit the woman in the back as she was sleeping. Generally, aren't you supposed to shoot those things into the air? That's not at people who are sleeping. She was rushed to the hospital. Mr. Leshman was taken to jail on charges, including felonious assault. So, happy 4th of July. Not the way he anticipated celebrating the semi-quincentennial, I'm guessing. From the international file, the broken news, a man in Oban, Scotland has been charged with assault after allegedly grabbing a seagull from the street and using it to attack a member of the public. A seagull. Police were called after the man allegedly seized two seagulls and used one of them as a weapon, though it is unclear how. Authorities did not arrest him immediately at the scene, but escorted him home while further inquiries were conducted. He was then charged shortly after authorities confirmed that neither of the birds appeared to have been seriously injured during the unusual incident. Using a seagull as a weapon. All right, that's one we haven't heard before. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a family in Laguna Hills, California. I love this story. Family in Laguna Hills, very ritzy part of Southern California. This family is facing a lawsuit from their homeowners association after they built a taller fence to protect their goats from coyote attacks. Steve Bloom lost 7 of his goats before raising his original 6-foot fence to 8 feet. He also added blinking lights and installed a 45-degree angled extension reaching 9 feet tall. That did keep the coyotes out of the yard, he said, but the HOA filed suit because he failed to seek prior approval for his fortified fence. His wife, Karen, of course, would be Karen, questioned the logic of the lawsuit, noting the fences on the tennis courts reach 15 feet and the life of a goat is more important than a tennis ball. Okay, there's some logic to that. The HOA says nearly a year of negotiations failed and they are asking a judge to enforce the 6-foot fence limit. What I found to be hilarious about this is that the HOA apparently did not have a problem with the goats. They didn't have a problem with the blinking lights or the barbed wire. It was the height of the fence that got them all upset. The goats were fine. The blinking lights were fine. It was the height of the fence that caused the lawsuit. All right. I would have thought it would have been the goats in the backyard in Laguna Hills that would have caused the problem. But no, that was fine. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hi, I'm Josie. My daughter turns 5 today. Blow out the candles. I'm also an Ohio State Highway Patrol trooper. When you move over and slow down, you're not only giving me room to work, you're making sure I can get home to celebrate with my daughter.
Roadside workers have lives and families, but when they're on the job, they put it all on the line to protect and serve us. Let's all give them room to work. When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. What constitutes a dream job? If you could have your dream job, what would that look like? Well, a new survey of 2,000 workers finds that today's dream job includes flexible hours, job security, good colleagues, a short commute, and even a paid birthday off. Those would be some of the top wants of folks in the survey. Also among the most desired perks, 46% want health plans, 29% desire mental health days, and 27% are looking for gym memberships. All right. 33% in the survey, fully one-third, want a career that aligns with their values, while 30% say they prioritize human connection in the workplace. 32% want to work in a role with development opportunities, looking for that, and 27% want a future-proof career. I'm not sure that even exists anymore in 2026, but that's what they say, a future-proof career. 51%, digging a little deeper into the data here, 51% say they would accept lower pay for a role that offers strong purpose, and 79% want to make a positive difference. Of course, how you define that will vary, but 79% say they want to make a positive difference. Nearly half, 48% in the survey, say that social media has actually helped them discover careers that they never knew existed. And 51% agree that people should feel free to pursue any job. Now, however you define dream job, go and get it. Most of us would agree with that. And 38% of workers in the survey believe that it is now, today, more acceptable to change careers midstream than maybe what it was a generation or two ago. I would have to agree with that. I don't know that there's ever really been a stigma, but sometimes people look at you kind of funny in the past if you just up and decided to completely change career paths. But it is certainly more acceptable now.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
Once again, putting the folks at Legacy Farmers Cooperative in the spotlight this morning. And today we're speaking with Chris Berger. He is Petroleum Sales Specialist at Legacy Farmers. This is just another example of such a wide-ranging suite of services and such that you offer. And really not just to the agriculture community. For example, the fuel terminal in Findlay is open to all.
Absolutely, Chris. In fact, there's a lot of perks that are available to customers if they open up a fuel account with Legacy. First of all, you'll get 6 cents off the posted price off of gas and then 10 cents off of diesel. We also have diesel at the pump. And then another perk, I guess, is just the space. I mean, you have the space to move around there. You can move around a big rig. You can move around an RV. You can move around pretty much anything. And like you said, it's open to the general public 24/7, and we also take credit cards.
Yeah, that space cannot be understated, especially this time of year. People are out, you know, with their campers heading out on vacation. Not everywhere is it easy to get in and out like it is there at the fuel terminal. And again, this is just one aspect of what you do. You serve the entire public with the fuel terminal, but talk a little bit about what petroleum sales is all about with respect to the agriculture community and some of the things that you provide specifically to farmers.
Yeah, specifically just the farmers. And not just the farmers, this is the general public as well. Anybody that has a fuel tank, and this includes a heating fuel too for the winter.
Okay.
We will deliver fuel out to your farm, your shop, your business, or wherever.
How much of a concern has this especially been? We all know what the price of fuel has been like over the course of the past couple of months. And I would imagine, especially for those in the ag industry right now, as they're very busy out there in the fields, how big of a concern is that to folks in the ag industry?
Certainly, Chris. I mean, it's been a big concern. The price of fuel has been Well, it went up probably about $2 to $3 per gallon there back earlier in April. Mm-hmm. It sustained a little bit, but it's still a little bit high. It's still about a 75 cents to a dollar higher than we're accustomed to seeing it. If peace persists in the Middle East, I do expect it to go down, and hopefully by the end of summer, it'll be back down to a normal price to get good prices for harvesting.
Are you able to manage that at all, or mitigate some of the effects? Again, especially to the ag industry that is so dependent on that for, you know, this time of year, especially. You mentioned harvest later on in the year.
Unfortunately, it's so volatile right now. We have no way to mitigate it. Mm. The only thing that I can tell your customer or commercial or business or farmer is to have the storage. You know, if you're thinking about buying new fuel tanks or bigger fuel tanks or just upgrading, we supply that stuff as well. You can give us a call at any time, and we'll certainly help you.
I would imagine that most commercial and agricultural consumers have pretty sizable storage tanks for that very reason.
Some do, some don't. You'd be surprised. I mean, an ideal situation for, say, you're a grower would be have enough fuel storage for the fall, for harvest. Mm-hmm. That way you can lock it in at a good price.
Yeah.
Usually it's historically best pricing for fuel if you get it back in December or January. And if you have enough storage to maybe last you all year long, that would be the best time to get it. I mean, you can lock in fuel, off-road diesel, for as low as maybe $2.50 a gallon. Hmm. And if you have enough for all year, you don't have to worry about anything.
How much, and I will ask this, and I know this, don't mean to put you on the spot with a, you know, specific number, but I'm just curious, how much fuel will a farmer go through when he's going through the planting season, for example?
It depends how much they're farming. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, the more ground they're working, that's going to use more fuel. So if there's a lot of tillage, then certainly you're going to use more fuel. But a lot of it depends on how much ground you're farming and
but they're, you know, not stuff. They're not getting, you know, 40 or 50 miles to the gallon like we are in our passenger cars.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, certainly not. The harder you work that plow or that combine, the more fuel you're going to use.
And then, of course, you double that when it comes, you know, to harvest time, getting all of that stuff out of the ground then.
Absolutely, yes.
So not an inexpensive proposition.
No, it's not. It's not at all. And getting more storage is not an inexpensive proposition either, unfortunately.
That's a good point as well. But again, this is one of the services that you can provide for anyone in the agriculture business who wants to, you know, maybe, like you said, expand their storage to sort of mitigate some of that issue. Again, you can supply the fuel, you can supply the storage. Really, you're there to serve all of the petroleum needs.
Yeah, and that includes DEF and oils too, Chris. We supply 15W40, we supply tractor hydraulic fluid. We also supply DEF equipment, DEF fluid, and plumbing and accessories and all that good stuff. We'll custom tailor a solution for you when it comes to DEF and fuel.
Chris Berger, again, is Petroleum Sales Specialist for Legacy Farmers Cooperative with us this morning in the spotlight. And if folks want to learn more about the various services that you can offer in this regard, there's more information on the website, right?
Absolutely. Go to legacyfarmers.com or you can give us a call at 419-425-3835.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, that is goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media. You can sign up for our daily email newsletter. There's a link there to email us directly with anything you want to share and lots more. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform. That will help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much for helping us spread the word. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, Educate, Exercise, Empower. That's what you get out of it when you walk with a doc each month from Blanchard Valley Health System and the YMCA. We'll have details. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.